Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the TBH Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler Henry, and what a great week it's been so far. Already one episode, we had a chance to talk a little bit about the Eastern and Western Conference Finals and also get into a little bit of talk later on about Formula One with Ethan Jordan. But right now, it's time to talk about one of the main attractions of sports this time of year. It is the NFL, and here to help me talk about it is Alex Weiner. Alex Weiner, of course, an esteemed writer for Sports Illustrated, Cardinals writer, Arizona State writer, and also covering Arizona State for the State Press. Alex, it is great to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Very esteemed career I've got going for myself.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Tyler. Yeah, this is going to be fun. We had a radio show back when you were in college, before you were an old man, and you haven't really gotten the chance to sit down and talk football like we used to, so this will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's certainly been a while, but we're putting an end to that right now, putting an end to the drought, and yeah, it is definitely good. So let's get right into it. A fantastic week of football action, and actually I want to start with the first game that came back, Texans and Chiefs, going in a slightly different direction than what we had previously discussed, but I did want to get your thoughts on this. We're obviously not going to talk about every game or every team, but this was a Kansas City Chiefs team that the 34-20 score, not necessarily as close as I think the game really was. The Chiefs made this look awfully easy, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And this is it's a Texans team. Granted, they lost a couple guys like DeAndre Hopkins, but went up pretty big on the Chiefs in the playoffs last year. The Chiefs obviously came back, but no, Kansas City, I mean, there's just another dynamic with them, and his name is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I know that when we were drafting fantasy football teams and all that, that he was a really trendy pick that he's going to have a monster season. He was a rookie. They kind of used their running backs a little bit by committee in the past, and absolutely not. No, he was spectacular, and he just really adds another dimension to this team. Patrick Mahomes is always going to be Patrick Mahomes. It's always amazing just watching the amount of weaponry that one team can have. And Houston just was completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think Houston looked overwhelmed. Kansas City looked comfortable. The other great thing about the Chiefs is that they can have different guys hurt you every week. This is not a team that needs Tyreek Hill to go out and get big numbers every week. This is not a team that is even going to necessarily need Helaire to be producing every week. They're going to find their guy, and Mahomes is going to make it happen. So, the sky really does feel like the limit for the Chiefs. I do feel like they're as good as advertised. And let me just ask you this before we move on from this game. After what you saw in week one, after seeing Clyde on the field doing his thing, after seeing the defense, which, let's be honest, looked a lot better than I think a lot of us expected, is this Chiefs team not only the favorite to win it all this year, possibly after week one, are they still a pretty comfortable favorite over everybody maybe not named Baltimore?
Comfortable favorite? Well, everyone not named Baltimore. I mean, those are the top two teams in the league. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious that they are. Just from a talent perspective, what they did last season, Baltimore more so in the regular season, the Chiefs in the postseason. I would say yes, because I think that there's a flaw in all of the best NFC teams. While it's a little more difficult to find the flaws in the Chiefs and the Ravens. So I would say, yeah, I think it's, those two right now, it's their season to win. You could also go the Saints or the 49ers as, it's their season to win too. But I don't know. I just think that the Chiefs have a dimension that neither of those two have. They have a quarterback that could take the extra mile that neither of those two teams have. Drew Brees is over 40 years old, and Jimmy Garoppolo is not quite consistent enough. And, Mahomes stepped up in the biggest stages in the postseason, and Lamar Jackson has yet to do that. So I have the Chiefs as my Super Bowl favorite, and I think that if you want to go comfortable, that might be a little disrespectful to a couple other of those teams that I mentioned, but man, they really looked like the Super Bowl favorites in week one.
They certainly did. I want to talk about a few other teams while we're on the topic of teams that are going to be competitive and kind of the impression that they made in week one. And I don't want to waste too much time on it because, you and I were kind of joking before the show about it. The Ravens beat the Browns 38-6. They are definitely, if they're not the second most favored team to win the Super Bowl, they are the team to win the Super Bowl. They were my pick in the preseason to win it all this season. And let me just ask you, as a Ravens fan that's been around this team for a long time, did you really see even a chink in their armor this week either?
First of all, how dare you for picking them and putting that evil on them. Can't believe it. Did you pick the Clippers too?
So this is actually the first time that this conversation has happened between the two of us. So Alex Weiner is finding this out for the first time. So as you know, I had Koki and Jordan on the show earlier this week. and we made picks for Game 7. And Koki and Jordan both said they thought the Nuggets were going to pull it off. And I said that this Clippers team felt too big to fail and that I trusted Kawhi enough that I thought they were going to go out and get it done. Alex, I'm so sorry.
How dare you? I don't want to touch on that subject. I just want to leave it at how dare you.
Fair enough. I exist to ruin your team's lives. That's all I'll say.
The Ravens played a pretty perfect game against the Browns. The Browns, I mean, from the first drive, they showed like a little bit of vulnerability on like the first like three plays. Nick Chubb got some pretty good yardage really early on. But then Baker throws an interception, and then the Ravens are just go. Like, they really didn't stop until like the very end of the game when RG3 was in. And it was a 32-point game. I mean, 38-6 is a just like swatting away Cleveland like a fly. And this is a Cleveland Browns team that, you know, last year everyone thought was going to be a lot better. Me, myself included, they weren't. This year, I still think they're going to be a lot better than they were last year. I mean, they bring in Kevin Stefanski. I mean, anybody is a upgrade over Freddie Kitchens at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in Stefanski, who has done some pretty good things with quarterbacks. He's a decent track record with that. They added the offensive line. I like Jack Conklin a lot, and their defense got a little bit better. It didn't happen week one. Their Baltimore secondary really shut down the Browns' weapons, and the Browns were missing a couple of DBs, including Greedy Williams. That definitely hurt a lot. So I'm curious to see what the Browns look like maybe week four, but I had a lot higher expectations for them than this.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement. I was not one of the guys that sold into all of the hype last year. I know some people were taking them as like a dark horse Super Bowl pick, and I thought that was a little ambitious because they're one of those teams where like, okay, until we actually see that you've changed, I am not going to believe that you as an organization are capable of producing a team that good. And, you know, I think this year they went out, they really did shore up some of the positions where, you know, they weren't just going out and getting skill guys. It seemed like they really had an intention in the draft of building up a team that was going to be competitive. And granted, the Ravens are really good, but they just did not look good. And before we move on from that game, I don't want to talk about the Ravens anymore. Obviously, they're very good. On the Browns' perspective, Baker Mayfield has been incredibly quiet this offseason. That's something that a lot of people have been talking about, and that doesn't really fit his MO. Do you think that that's him actually being more mature and that that's something that's going to benefit the team? Or do you think that in order for the Browns to be successful, we're going to need to see him kind of get that fire back and really be kind of that cocky, almost borderline arrogant quarterback that goes out and puts up big numbers on a Sunday afternoon?
That's an interesting question. I haven't really dug too deep into Cleveland itself to know exactly why, if he's like, you know, in the lab or just the fact that there's a pandemic going on, you just see less things with Baker Mayfield in it. All I know is he's in a book club, as I saw from all those commercials on Sunday, which were wonderful, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. We do love our NFL ad. So moving on to a matchup that was supposed to be, it was America's game of the week. It was supposed to be between two teams with very high playoff aspirations. I still think they're two teams that are going to make the playoffs, but you know, let me ask you this. I'll get to my point on the Saints as a Saints fan, but let me ask you, is this Buccaneers team in a little bit of trouble here early on, or do you think it's just going to take a couple of games for them to really start meshing together as a unit that, as we kind of joked around before, kind of the 2014 dream team, all getting used to playing with each other?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. My concern actually is Tom himself. He really didn't look good. I mean, that second interception, that was a terrible turnover, and that really sort of hindered their ability to come back in that game. I don't know. I mean, Tom Brady was falling off a little bit last year. He just wasn't quite the same, and in a big moment in a playoff game, he threw a pick six.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's no longer with Belichick, and granted, he has much better weapons in Tampa Bay. He has, you know, two receivers who have been better than anybody the Patriots have had in over the last few years, mm-hmm. at least, with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Multiple tight ends. You know, Tom likes his tight ends. He has a couple running backs. I like Ronald Jones, Fournette. We'll see. And they also have LeSean McCoy. I always forget they have LeSean McCoy. But I always forget LeSean McCoy's still in the league, to be perfectly honest.
That's fair.
I don't know. He just really didn't look good. And there's obviously, once they mesh a little bit, he has more on the same page with his receivers. He didn't get a preseason, so who knows? By week six, they might be like fully in. I'd be worried. I'd be a little worried after game one.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily all on Brady because no one really looked great in that game. Leonard Fournette got 5 carries for 5 yards. Gronk, who a lot of people were hyping in the preseason saying, well, you know, he doesn't have the big arm brace anymore. He looks really good. 2 catches for 11 yards. I mean, Chris Godwin did his part, but yeah, Brady throwing the 2 picks really put the nail in the coffin for the Buccaneers. And I just don't know. You know, I really wonder, you know, I'm not going to be one of these crazy conspiracy theorists that says that Tom Brady is a system QB, but he's in a system he's unfamiliar with a coach he's unfamiliar with, on a team he's unfamiliar with. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not that mesh kind of comes along as the season goes on. But they got pretty well handled by a Saints team that going into the season, you know, I feel like the last couple of years I've had my reservations about the Saints just because, you know, as a fan, I feel like I always get my heart broken at the end of it. But they looked really good. I mean, they went out and handled their business. Drew Brees did exactly what he needed to do, which is not throw the ball super deep downfield, you know, find the guys on the short routes. And Alvin Kamara was amazing. I mean, he basically torched the defense on a number of plays. I think, honestly, having a little bit more pep in his step may have to do with the amount of money in the wallet now. But this Saints team looked really good on both ends of the ball.
Yeah, just a couple points before. When have the Saints ever broken your heart? And B, another thing with Tom Brady is the fact that he's 43 years old.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking about this as well in our group chat where, you know, yeah, Drew Brees is right behind him. I believe Drew Brees is 42 right now, maybe 41. But he is in an offense that is literally designed around that. He has the best short game receiver in the league in Michael Thomas, who will be missing some time now. He's got a pass catching back out of the backfield in Alvin Kamara. He has all the tools and the weapons that he needs to succeed. So I'm not worried about the Saints from an offense perspective, and I'm not worried about Drew Brees because of that system. But again, it'll be interesting to see where the Saints are, and it'll be interesting to see what they can do without Michael Thomas. I think we're really going to see a resurgence in Emmanuel Sanders' career, which really could give New Orleans that next step that they need in terms of another target to reach for.
He's a different receiver than Michael Thomas is, too.
He is.
I'm curious just how they're going to adjust, like who's really going to go into that Michael Thomas role. It could be Emmanuel Sanders getting the brunt, but I mean, Emmanuel Sanders is not Michael Thomas, so I don't know. I'm curious to sort of see how this offense adjusts because they really depended on him a lot last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing against the Raiders. It's not the next week. It's not the best defense in the world to go up against. And then afterwards, they have Green Bay. That'll be a tough task. That game's going to be a really interesting sort of tell because both teams will kind of have some time with each other. And without Michael Thomas, we'll sort of see what Drew Brees can pull out of the hat.
Yeah, I tend to be in agreement. I think that Emmanuel Sanders is too different of a receiver. I think the guy we might see take that next step is Tre'Quan Smith. I mean, I think he is a really good route runner when it comes to, you know, going on some of those shorter routes. So, you know, we'll see whether or not he can have his shot. But not spending too much time on that game, I want to move on to what was probably the best game of the week. And this will be one of the last games we talk about in terms of, you know, teams with playoff aspirations. First of all, how loaded is this NFC West this year? They could get four playoff teams in.
It's not impossible. I mean, all four of them looked good in their first game in one way or another. I mean, three of them won, and the 49ers lost a four-point game and a really high-level game against the Arizona Cardinals. So, I mean, they would have to essentially split with each other. Like, if the Seahawks go, like, 5-1 in the division and, like, I don't know, the Rams go 1-5 or 2-4, something like that would probably eliminate that possibility, but if they all go and go like 3-3 and then maybe 4-2, 2-4 here and there, and then just like dominate the rest of their schedules, I mean, it's possible. And that would be wild that in the first year that we have seven playoff teams, an entire division gets in because all of them are playoff teams.
Well, and let me ask you this. Let's say hypothetically, before we move on from this point, let's say hypothetically that these teams do all split. They all go 2-2 against each other or 1-1 against each other. If the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fall low enough into the standings to where they're not in contention for the playoffs, where's the other NFC playoff team? Because I look up and down the standings and I just don't know. Is it the Vikings? Is it the Bears? I think they might actually have four teams that are good enough to deserve a playoff spot this season if the cards fall their way.
I think there are some teams who have some decent ceilings. I mean, I wouldn't count out the Eagles entirely, although they looked very not good on Sunday, but they were missing some guys up front, and of course Miles Sanders adds another dynamic to them, but Carson Wentz really didn't look that good in that game. Favorites? I mean, the Vikings lost a lot of firepower on that defense, and then losing Michael Pierce, obviously, who opted out of the season, definitely hurts, and it is just not really an obvious answer. I mean, Atlanta has shown flashes the last couple of years that they're better than their records say, but then they always underachieve, so...
Yeah, I mean,
these four teams might be sort of like you know, all sort of on the same, like, ladder as far as the top seven teams in the NFC are concerned.
Yeah, I tend to be in complete agreement. So I wanted to get into that Cardinals-Niners game just a little bit. You have been covering the Cardinals. You've seen them in training camp. I don't know what you projected them at. I had them at 11 wins this year. Really, really am high on Kyler and the Cardinals, and I think that they gave me a little bit of validation on Sunday with a 24-20 win over the team that coming into the season had the highest odds to make the Super Bowl again out of the NFC.
11-5. I mean, they did give some good validation. The Cardinals are a different team than they were last year. As far as a lot of their personnel is concerned. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, it's year two of the new era that went pretty well last year. I mean, they only won five games, but they looked much better than the direction that, you know, Josh Rosen and Steve Wilkes were going in. And now they bring in DeAndre Hopkins. They have one of the best receiver cores in the league with Hopkins and Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald and a few younger guys that, who knows, maybe one of them steps up in that as a slot receiver and, you know, puts together a pretty good season. And then defensively is really where you sort of walk in on a massive hole last year. But now Patrick Peterson is, you know, not suspended, so that helps that he's on the field. They added Dre Kirkpatrick, a veteran, who at least knows what he's doing back there. And that gives Byron Murphy the opportunity to play in the slot. And he made two unbelievable defensive plays at the very end of that game, which was a really good sign for the Cardinals. And their pass rush got a lot better. And just in the middle linebacker core, they pretty much upgraded essentially everything they could have on defense. They didn't add any superstars, but they're just a lot more solid throughout than they were last year when they were just had gaping holes essentially, you know, on the offensive line and everywhere on that defense. So they're going to be just a lot tougher to beat with like those big plays. And if the Cardinals stay in it, you know, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins can burn you. So yeah, they're going to be really competitive this year.
I completely agree. And let me ask you about the other side of that coin. I know there are a lot of people, and we actually have a question out of the mailbag that I'm going to get to right now. A question that came, I got to just make sure that I have this right, from Cole Noble, courtesy of the Slaw Sports Show. And he wanted to know, you know, is it panic time for the 49ers, who keep continuously getting smacked by the injury bug while being in the best division in football? Personally, I don't think there's any reason to overreact to the way the 49ers played. I think they played very well against a Cardinals team that is going to be very good this year. But let me just ask the better football mind of Alex Weiner. Do you think there's any reason for Niners fans to be concerned at this point?
I don't think so. I didn't think that the Kittle injury was going to be super significant. Deebo Samuel, you know, is probably not going to miss too much time. I mean, there was thoughts that he might have been able to go week one, and he wasn't. Same thing with Brandon Ayuk. I imagine they'll be back sooner rather than later. And the way that Shanahan's offense runs, I mean, the way that they use their two running backs, Jerick McKinnon and Raheem Mostert, they did a lot of damage. I mean, 76-yard touchdown pass to Mostert. Jerick McKinnon caught another touchdown pass. I mean, Shanahan knows how to find other guys in this offense, and I think his mind, as long as with the athletes that this team has, especially when they get Samuel and Ayuk back, and especially George Kittle, this could be a loaded offense, and so I wouldn't really be worried about that. They are in a tough division. They have a tougher schedule, but I don't know. I think week one, they ran into, you know, a Cardinals team that had a lot of talent. They were missing some guys, and it was a dogfight, and they happened to lose. They might beat them next time, but I think the Niners are still a really talented team, and I wouldn't be like, uh-oh, the Niners are in big trouble now. Like, they could come out and just dominate next week, and I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. Well, it's time to move on to one of our favorite segments. I believe we ran this on the Road to Glory show back in the day, early on in the football season, and I want to bring it back here. It's Stock Watch, and basically, I'm going to give you a team. I want you to assume that you have some stock in this team, and I want you to tell me whether you're buying more, holding what you have, or selling on this team. And I want to start with a team that everybody is talking about right now, the Jacksonville Jaguars, a 27-20 victory over a Colts team that a lot of people expected to do some good things this year. Alex Weiner, what is your take, buy, sell, or hold on the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Buy, sell, or hold. I didn't have very much stock in them to begin with, but they're fun, but I'm not buying any. I'll hold. You know, they can definitely steal some wins for some teams. I mean, they have kind of a quarterback that's fearless in Gardner Minshew. They have a running back core of guys I've really never heard much about. be quite frank. I like some of their receivers, but on defense, it's just like, you know, some nice young talent. Like, I like Josh Allen a lot, and I think that they had a pretty decent draft as far as their defense this year. C.J. Henderson, I think, is a good prospect. But no, I can't buy too much stock in them. They played against Phillip Rivers, and Phillip Rivers had a very Phillip Rivers game. He threw for a lot of yards. He had a chance to win in the end, and he threw an interception. That's just what happens when you play Phillip Rivers sometimes, a lot of the time. And so, no, I'm not buying any Jacksonville Jaguars stock. I will watch them. They are fun, but I am not imagining that they win very many games.
Okay, fair enough. Let me ask you about a team in a very similar situation in terms of pulling an upset this week. The newly named Washington football team with a win that I don't think anyone saw coming. 27-17 over the Eagles. Alex Weiner, are you buying, selling, or holding your stock on the Washington football team?
I'm going to buy a little bit.
Okay.
Not a lot. They still have a lot of holes, and they need, you know, we'll see how consistent Haskins can be. They've just lost Trent Williams. That obviously hurts, but, and, man, they have some athletes on offense. And Terry McLaurin kind of broke out last year. They have a running back core that, you know, I don't love all the guys, but Antonio Gibson looked pretty good, and he's a very athletic running back. And then defensively, though, is where I really want to focus, because that defensive line is actually really scary. And Chase Young was as good as advertised. A sack and a half, a forced fumble. He was spectacular in his debut. And that is probably the best sign that Washington had. I mean, you can like, oh, we won the game, sure, this. But like, you want to look for a few things. Haskins is definitely one of them. And how Chase Young lives up to the hype is another one. And another thing is they have Ron Rivera as their coach. I think he's too good of a coach to like win two games.
Yeah, I tend to be on the bandwagon of like Ron Rivera's existence means that I'm not going to sell. And it actually gets me kind of excited. I don't know if I would be buying quite yet, but I really think you have a good point about the younger guys kind of stepping up. Another team that I want to ask you about, same game actually, and this is the only time that I'll do this on the show, but I want to ask you whether you are going to be selling some stock on the Philadelphia Eagles. This is an Eagles team that I think one of my hottest takes on my season preview this year, I had them missing the playoffs. I actually had the Cowboys getting in at 8-8, and I don't know, man. There's something about the Eagles. They are injury prone at every single stinking position on that offense. Are you ready to start selling a little bit of stock on Philly yet?
Wait, you have the Cowboys at 8-8?
I believe either 8-8 or 9-7, one or the other.
Not too high on the Cowboys.
Not very high on the Cowboys.
I think I did have the Eagles squeaking into my playoffs. I did on the 7th seed. I don't know. They were so bad in this first game that it just makes me want to sell, but I don't want to sell too quickly because the Eagles can do this. I mean, they're the Eagles. They can play Washington football team one week and look awful, and then next week they can play the Rams and be pretty good. I just don't really know with them. The injury bug is a big concern, and if like Carson Wentz goes down in week 4, then they're going to win like 4 games. So I don't totally want to sell my stock in the Eagles yet. It definitely, my wallet took a hit this week. I'm going to hold. They have a lot of talent. They are one of the more talented teams in the NFC. It's just staying healthy, and it's, you know, pretty consistent that they don't, which is unfortunate. Because, you know, this is the team that won the Super Bowl, and if they could, like, run it back every year and be one of the top teams in the NFC, that'd be a lot of fun. But they're just not. And so I think that they have the talent to be a really competitive team in the NFC East. So I'm going to hold for now, but that was a really bad game. 8 sacks on Wentz? That can't happen again.
Yeah, the offensive line turned into a turnstile. And honestly, I mean, with Carson Wentz's injury issues, the one thing you don't want to see him doing is taking hits. So definitely a concerning game for them. I got two more teams that I want to ask you about. These two are a little bit more fun. First of all, I want to know, are you in? Are you buying stock on this Cam Newton New England Patriots team that gets a 21-11 victory over the Dolphins this week?
Not yet. I'm not buying more stock. I think that they're a fine team. I have them just over 500. And just on the outside looking in on the playoffs, so I never bet against Belichick, but it's just a lot of differences and a lot of guys they lost on the defense with opt-outs. Their defense looked really good against the Dolphins. And again, it's the Dolphins who I expect to be a lot better this year, but, you know, at the end of the day, they are still the Dolphins, and it's the first game of the season. Cam Newton ran the offense really differently than I'd ever seen like a Patriots offense run. Obviously, he ran the ball 15 times,
mm-hmm.
which is even more than, you know, I think anybody expected.
Like, I think most of Tom Brady's rushing attempts were sacks in previous years.
That's true. Yeah, they were a ground and pound, which is kind of what they need to be with, you know, not amazing receivers on their team, unless N'Keal Harry can break out, which that fumble said he's still got some work to do. But I don't know. I'm not ready to totally buy on them. They're up on a lot of power rankings I'm looking at. But I don't know. I'm going to keep a close eye on that one because, you know, Cam Newton looked, you know, not amazing, but he looked really productive. And so that could really be something to watch.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest points that I made was this is going to look like a different team than what we've seen out of New England in the past. And I think that it wasn't quite what I expected. I didn't expect Cam to get quite as many rushing yards as what he did, but I definitely expected him to get more involved. And I definitely expected him to take some more deep shots. I know they don't have the greatest receiving core in the world, but man, if they could find one guy that could go out and be that deep threat for them, I really feel like they could take that next step. But I have one more team that I want to ask you about. This is a team that people who bought stock over the last couple of years, they had a chance to buy really low. They were told that last year or this year, they were going to see a return on that investment. So let me ask you, are you buying, selling, or holding on the newly moved Las Vegas Raiders, who pick up a 34-30 win over a Panthers team that also kind of looked better than I think we expected them to?
Yeah, both those teams looked a little bit better than expected, but now, I'm not a believer in the Raiders. I mean, they're going to play, the Saints next. Then they have the Patriots, which is a tough game. Then they have the Buffalo Bills, and then they have the Chiefs. They could be like a one-win team after that stretch or a two-win team. And then they have the Buccaneers next. I mean, it's terrible.
How many wins would they have to get in that span to get you to pay attention?
Probably like three.
Okay. That seems reasonable to me. I think that if they can hang with the big boys for three wins in that span, that does make them a good football team. But I'm kind of with you here. I'm a little hesitant as well.
Yeah, I just really don't trust the defense. They added some guys like Corey Littleton. They desperately needed a linebacker, and Corey Littleton's a good guy for that. They've drafted some defensive players the last couple of years. Clelin Ferrell last year. This year, they get Arnett from Ohio State, the cornerback. It's just I have a lot of questions about this defense. I really don't trust it, and the Panthers are not an offense I expect to score 30 points very often. I get that it's week one, but the Raiders seem like a very 7-9-y team to me, and I'm not really going to buy much stock that they'll be much better than that.
All right, fair enough. Well, that'll do it for Stock Watch, and we may or may not bring this back the next couple of weeks as we kind of, you know, continue looking at people's overreactions to things early on in the season. A couple of quick topics that I want to hit from week one, and then we'll get into a final segment and we'll get you out of here. I know you got a lot on your plate tonight, but I did want to ask you about a few individual performances. And I know that you're more of a student of the game. You kind of see things in more of an analyst perspective than a fan's perspective. So let me ask you, what did you see this week out of Joe Burrow in his debut with a Bengals team that he is going to be expected to be the guy for in the next several years?
Yeah, I thought he was really composed when he had a really good opportunity to win the game at the end. That last drive was really impressive. I mean, this is not an easy Chargers defense. I know they're missing Derwin James,
mm-hmm.
but still a lot of talent on that defense, and Joe Burrow put them in a really good position to either win, which, you know, the penalty against AJ Green prevented them from, or tie, which, yeah, I don't know who on here saw that kick.
Randy Bullock.
I'm not really sure if he really got hurt on the kick. I know he was like grabbing his leg afterwards, or he just like, you know, completely botched it and then like grabbed his leg just sort of to save face. I don't really know. I'd have to look it up. But I thought it was a solid debut for Burrow. Nothing great, obviously, you know, no touchdowns, a pick. But I thought he was, for the most part, pretty sharp and seemed pretty mature. And he looked pretty composed when he really needed to, which is a really big deal for a young quarterback.
Yeah, I think the thing that's impressed me the most of Joe Burrow so far, it's not anything he's done on the field. It's the fact that everybody in that locker room is saying in interviews, and you can see it, you know, in the pregame tapes and whatnot, or the preseason tapes, I mean, he is a leader. at that young age, he is a guy that he has the respect and the ear of all the guys in the locker room. I think he's doing things the right way, and I'm really excited to see how far he can take a Bengals team that, let's be honest, under Andy Dalton and good old Marvin Lewis, have just underachieved for the last ever. I mean, I can't remember the last time the Bengals did something they were supposed to do.
They haven't won a playoff game since 91, I want to say.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds about right. While we're on the talk of some losers, I know you get a grin on your face thinking about Marvin Lewis in that sentence, although now he's doing some good things at the collegiate level, but I want to ask you a question that's been on my mind for a long time now. I keep wanting to do it. People keep telling me not to do it. Can I have permission to write off Drew Lock as a bad quarterback yet?
Oh, you're in on the fact that Drew Lock's a bad quarterback?
I am. I've been on this train for a while. And you know what? I even said in my season preview, I had one of my other hot takes, and I think you called me out on this on Twitter as well. I had the Broncos at 5-11 before Von Miller got hurt. And I said, I think this is a Broncos team that is going to be in a position a lot this year where at the end of games, and this is on tape, I said this on the podcast last week, I said they're going to be in a lot of games this year where at the last minute, they're going to need a guy to step up and lead a game-winning drive. And I don't think Drew Lock is capable of doing that at all. And I realized that the circumstances were really weird in this game, but sure enough, week one, what happened? Drew Lock gets the ball back. Granted, poor time management on his coach's part, and we'll get into that in a minute, but I don't think he is an NFL caliber quarterback. Am I wrong in saying that this early?
Didn't he have like 21 seconds left though?
He had more than that. Granted, again, he made an interesting decision on one of the last plays. Instead of just throwing the ball away, he kind of stepped up and danced around and killed a lot of time. And again, I'm not saying that was entirely on him. I'm not saying he got the ball back with like 3 minutes left to go, but I haven't seen the kind of composure, even in the regular part of the game, out of him yet, where like I trust him as a quarterback and as a decision maker.
Well, I think he actually impressed a little bit in that last year. I mean, they had some pretty good success, and then obviously the offseason, the Broncos fans are like, well, we have the league MVP on our team, so we're probably going to win 10 games. I did not like Drew Lock coming out of college, actually. I was one of those like defectors a little bit. I thought his throwing motion was very gung-ho, but not very accurate, and I just didn't really trust him early on. I was actually a little bit impressed by him last year. I don't think he's like a top-tier quarterback. I don't think he's the worst quarterback in the league, but you're right. I don't think that he is the guy who's going to take them over the top just yet. He's a lot of learning to do, but I mean, he's also only started 6 games and he's 23 years old. So, the Broncos, certain people have really high expectations for the Broncos. I think they're a little better than a 500 team, maybe around 500. Von Miller injury obviously hurts that a little bit. I don't have high expectation for the Broncos this year. I think this is mostly, all right, we have all these new weapons. They're all really young and they're all going to grow up together. So I'm curious what Drew Lock looks like in year 3, like by the end of this year and then going into next year, because he's still going to have all those young weapons. Philip Lindsay, they have a really good dynamic duo with the receivers and Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Sutton, and then they have Noah Fant. So this could be one of the better offenses going forward and for the next few years. This is a really big make or break year for Drew. Not really make or break, but like a really good like sort of peek into the development of Drew Lock. And so I'm not ready to like be like, I just don't see it with him, because I don't really yet, but I could, and I'm not giving up hope yet.
Right. I think where I get a little gung-ho with saying that is there's only been one other quarterback in the last 6 years that I've had this feeling about. And you know what? I got roasted a lot on several shows for saying it, but I didn't like Marcus Mariota either. I looked at him. I don't know what it was about him. If it was something in his throwing motion, if it was his decisions. And I just said, the guy's just not a good quarterback, in my opinion. Now, again, different style of quarterback, different kind of guy. And I think you're right. I think it'll be interesting to see what he does this year. But I don't know why. I just, something inside me wants to write him off already. But again,
you get the feeling. You just look at his face. He doesn't really look like a star quarterback.
He doesn't.
He looks like a teenager. So.
Yeah, he looks like that fun receiver on a college team that gets in like at the end of the game and everyone's really happy. They're like, oh yeah, that guy. And then he gets a catch and the stadium goes nuts. But anyway, before I get myself in any more trouble and then the guy goes off and has like an MVP caliber season, one other early impression that I wanted to get your opinion on, and this is more for our friend who has been talking a lot of smack about another sport recently, and just I wanted to get your take on this for the Matthew Chupex of the world, and if you know, you know. Are you ready to jump on the Packers are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFC train yet, or are the Vikings just not as good as advertised?
I think both can be true. I'm not going to pick the Packers as like the best team, although angry Aaron Rodgers was lovely to watch.
Mm-hmm.
My God, some of those throws. That one throw in the end zone with the toe tap, and him and Davante Adams were just on another level. 14 catches for Davante Adams, 156 yards. And if Aaron Rodgers can do that consistently, which he didn't really last year, but if he could be on that level consistently, then this is the best team in the NFC. I just kind of have to see it again. It's one of those things where I don't like betting against him, but I also have seen him not do this for a couple of years. And when Aaron Rodgers is right, oh my God, it's brilliant to watch. And I certainly think they can be the best team in the NFC. And Sunday was a really good sort of start, if that is what, you know, was in the cards for them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. One last thing, and then we will wrap this up. Obviously, plenty of NFL action coming at you next week. But before we move on to that, I wanted to get your opinion really quickly. Who was the team that impressed you the most, and which team was the biggest disappointment to you after 1 week of action?
Impressed me the most. A lot of teams really impressed me. Obviously, you know, the Chiefs and the Ravens did their thing. That was obviously very impressive. The Cardinals win over the 49ers was a really, really good win for them. I'm also going to go with Seattle in this offense because Russell Wilson, I mean, it's just sort of the reminder that, oh, yeah, this guy's also. We talk about Mahomes and some Lamar Jackson, and I get, like, you know, Deshaun Watson's getting some hype, and, you know, Kyler Murray's the trendy second-year quarterback to pick for MVP. But, my God, Russell Wilson just annihilated the Falcons' secondary in this game. And their offensive weapons looked good. And, you know, that helped my fantasy team, obviously, with DK Metcalf. And so, I don't know, Seattle's offense looked awesome. Defensively, they had a little bit of holes, but a lot of the Falcons' scoring came really late in that game when it was kind of settled. I don't know, Seattle could be a team that if, you know, they can do this, if their offense can look this dynamic, then, yeah, this it's another one of those teams where if certain things go right for them, they could be the best team in the NFC. Like, there's a few teams that can be the best team in the NFC. Like, the Saints are the safer pick, but, like, the Packers could be the best team. Or the Seahawks could be the best team. And I wouldn't be totally surprised. So those are the few teams that I was, like, really, really impressed by on Sunday. I'm trying to think if there's another one. I'll go to disappointments. Obviously, the Eagles, we already touched upon why they were disappointing.
Can I really quickly give my – just before you steal it from me, because I feel like you might, can I go ahead and give my disappointment for the week?
Sure.
It's the Giants' offensive line. How does Saquon Barkley carry the ball 15 yards for, or 15 times for 6 yards? How is that even possible?
You had faith in the Giants offensive line?
Well, no, but I had more faith than that. I mean, goodness gracious, Daniel Jones scrambling was the leading rusher this week.
I mean, it's also week one where the offensive line really hasn't played together with no preseason, and they were going up against probably, I'd imagine, the best team in football as far as getting into the backfield, which I think the Steelers are this year. I mean, Bud Dupree, oh my God, he was all over the place. And obviously, TJ Watt and Cameron Hayward, this team is loaded up front. So it was really bad matchup for the Giants, a really bad matchup for them. And we saw it. I'm not overly disappointed in the Giants. It's weird to see Saquon with like 6 yards next to his name, but I think they ran into the team that's like perfectly built to stop them.
Fair enough.
I'm a little bit disappointed in the Pittsburgh offense, to be quite honest, but their defense looked amazing. So,
all right. So who would you take for that overall biggest disappointment? I think the team that got disappointed the most from a team perspective was probably Detroit on that final drive, but that doesn't make them a disappointment. That's just, you know, sad.
They should have won that game.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
Poor Matt Stafford. Disappointing. The Vikings.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't really have a prayer in that game. And, you know, this is a team that's been in the playoffs a few times. I think they are worse this year. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs this year, so I didn't have high expectations. But they're the Vikings. They could always be competitive with Mike Zimmer at the helm, and they just weren't. And so that was a bit disappointing. I didn't expect week one that game would be so one-sided. Let's see another one. Probably I want to see the Colts for losing to the Jags, but that was a very Phillip Rivers game. So I don't know if I'm going to pick them. I'd probably go with the Browns. I mean, 6 points, I get you're playing the Ravens, but they just looked terrible throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
And I had to pick another one, probably the Houston Texans.
Okay, fair enough. And obviously you saw DeAndre Hopkins tweet after that game, you know, very, very blessed to be where I am on a Cardinals team that a lot of people picking to win double-digit games this year. So that is going to just about do it for our week one recap. Alex, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
We didn't even talk about the Jets. Oh, my God.
We'll have to get to them next week. And we will have continuous coverage of the NFL football as that goes on. But that is all we have time for today. So moving on to something that is near and dear to my heart over the last, oh, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 months. But something that has been near and dear to the heart of somebody else that we know for a lot longer. The Premier League is back in action, and here joining me to talk about it is friend of the show, Cokie Riley. Cokie, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate having you back after you came on earlier this week to talk about the NBA, and now here to talk some Premier League soccer.
We stand the Premier League here on this show.
Oh, absolutely. I think every show should stand the Premier League. So, you know, we wanted to give you guys not really a season preview per se, because obviously we've already had kind of an early impression of some of these teams. Some we haven't, we'll get into that here in a minute. But first, I just wanted to break down some of the teams at the top, the teams that really do have aspirations for winning it all this year. And let's start where I think we should. Let's start with Liverpool, a team that, granted, has not played a game yet. They're getting a rest up after a long European season, but a team that just dominated last season. 99 points for them, just shy of 100. And, I mean, completely clear of Man City in second. Cokie, you mentioned to me how difficult it is for a team in the Premier League to repeat as champs. But, man, you just get the feeling that if any team can do it, it's this Liverpool team, right?
Well, they certainly can. And probably because they're a perfectly constructed team that can play with a high line defensively because of their excellent one-on-one defense group that has perfect chemistry with each other. They have one of the best midfields in the world. And their front three is deadly, and they all play perfectly, complement each other perfectly together. So, there's not a ton else to say. It's like saying Patrick Mahomes is good. You know, this is in case you guys don't understand soccer quite as well. Of course, Liverpool's incredible, but I think the thing that makes me pause for concern, I guess, is just the lack of change in their team, which sounds silly, but one of the things you don't want in soccer is your team to get stale. You always want competition within the squad. You always want some new shiny toy that can add a new asset to your team. And there was rumors that Thiago from Bayern Munich was going to join. He hasn't joined yet. The transfer market is open until October due to all the COVID stuff. So he could very well easily be on Liverpool's team come October. But for now, they're stuck with they pretty much have the same exact team that won the title last season. So there could be some stasis with this team, lack of motivation, maybe. I guess it's the wrong word, but you know what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think the interesting thing, one, is that, you know, you mentioned wanting to switch it up, and I completely agree. I think if this is a Liverpool team that finished, you know, 1 or 2 points clear of Man City at the end of the year, you know, I think this is a team that I'm looking at, and I'm really questioning that. But two factors. One, they weren't just clear of Man City, they dominated. I mean, they were, I believe, what, 18 points up on Man City by the end of the year? They didn't lose a game until late in the season, and because it's the Premier League, you don't have like a playoff or anything like that. It's just the best team at the end of the season is the team that wins. There's not as much, I feel like, of a Super Bowl or a championship hangover, per se, because every team has had pretty much the same amount of rest. Now, as you mentioned to me earlier, They did go a little bit deeper into the European season, but they're getting that time back, you know, having an extra week off. So I guess my question to you is, if you had to take Liverpool or the field this year, if you had to put $150 down on it, what would you feel more comfortable taking if that was the situation you were put in?
I'm definitely taking the field, and the reason why is because my pick for this season, I mean, this might be early to say this for now, but I'm going to say it.
That is how previews work.
My pick for the season is my pick for the season is Manchester City to win the league. And
okay.
The reason why is because, yes, the margin was ugly last season, but this is a mad Manchester City team that didn't win any trophies this past season. They are just about as talented as this Liverpool team. And really what happened last season was a couple bad losses here and there, and some couple injuries, and now all of a sudden they're 10 points back with only like 15, 20 games left to play, and all of a sudden the deficit has grown too far for them to even contend for the title. It just kind of got out of hand for City last season. And I remember, I mean, City had won the last two Premier League trophies, and including a thriller two seasons ago against Liverpool. I just think that they're just as loaded. They're just as well coached as the Liverpool team. It's just a matter of, can they get the right bounces and play more consistently this season? And my guess is yes, because again, it's not a normal thing that Pep Guardiola did not win any trophies last season. And I just don't see how that trend will continue into 2020-2021.
Right. I tend to agree with you in terms of, I think they're going to be really good. I think that their run at this year's championship actually started last season. If you'll remember, Liverpool actually lost one and drew one in their final five. Man City ripped off a winning streak at the end of the season. And like you said, they looked like they were playing pretty ticked off. And, you know, I think the other thing that's really great with Man City, you've got a lot of veteran guys on Liverpool. I think Man City has a couple of really young guys that I'm expecting to see, you know, with another year of maturity and experience, step up and be even better than they already were last season. I think, you know, you've got Raheem Sterling up at the front. I think he's going to be putting on an absolute show again. And let me ask you this. I know I asked you if you'd take Liverpool or the field. You said you picked Man City. Do you feel like this is a two-horse race at the front, or do you think there's another team that might be able to sneak in where, you know, we get to the tail end of the season and we're talking about a three-horse race to see who's going to come away with the Premier League championship?
I definitely think this is a two-horse race, and this is especially if Man City can land Kalidou Koulibaly from Napoli and add that really dominant center half to go along with an Ake or a Laporte when he gets healthy. You know, that extra center back that can really push this team over the top, because they already have one of the best goalkeepers in the world in Ederson. Their fullback play is impeccable. They're strong in the defensive midfield, although they could probably use another guy on that side. But again, offensively, I mean, this team's incredible. Even with Riyad Mahrez and Sergio Aguero injured at the moment, like you mentioned, Sterling, Bernardo Silva, Ferran Torres, who they just picked up from Valencia. This team added over the summer, and I guess the late summer because COVID. But I think those additions, and especially if they add Koulibaly as well, makes City just, I think it raises City at least to the level of Liverpool, if not higher. I mean, Kevin De Bruyne like was the best player in the league last season, despite the fact that Liverpool was that far ahead of everybody. And really, but to really answer your question, it's these two and everybody else. Just given United's lack of squad depth, even though I really like their starting 11 and the amount of new guys at Chelsea this season, and no one else is even relatively close, even worth mentioning. I mean, so.
Yeah, fair enough. So I do think that there is a drop off, and then I think there's another tier kind of in and of itself, and that is the Man United Chelsea tier. And let me ask you really quickly. Very briefly, do you think there's another team in that tier, or do you agree with me that it's kind of, you know, you got the two at the top, and then Man U and Chelsea, and then everybody else?
If things go right at Arsenal, they could make the top four.
Okay, that's fair.
Be the only thing I would keep my eye on.
So for argument's sake, let's throw Arsenal into the mix. So between Man U, Chelsea, and Arsenal, before we get into those three teams, who do you think finishes, just give me your order, 1, 2, 3, on where you think those teams finish by the end of the season, assuming everybody stays healthy.
For me, it's Chelsea 3, United for personal five.
Okay, you have made me very happy. Yeah. Let's do a thing that I love doing. You know this. Let's talk about Chelsea. This is a Chelsea team that once again is going to have a lot of attacking power. Obviously, we saw a big step up just a season ago from the American wonder kid, Christian Pulisic, who I think is going to be a consistent fixture. What do you think is really the big step that we're going to see Chelsea take up from last season to this season in terms of the product that they put out there on the field?
The step up that this team needs to make is defensively. I mean, they were the worst defensive team in the top half of the Premier League last season, allowing the most goals out of any team in the top 10. And with an actual leader and vocal leader in Thiago Silva now at center back, and now you have a left back in Ben Chilwell who actually does play defense, unlike Marcos Alonso or Emerson. Now you're looking at a defense that actually could be pretty solid this season, especially if Edouard Mendy signs from Rennes before the end of the transfer window, and looks like that's going to happen. So there's your new goalkeeper as well. I guess the one big question mark with this team would probably be just the amount of new pieces they're going to have to implement into the squad. But the strong counter to that is the depth that this team has to not only contend in the Premier League, but to also do well in the FA Cup, to actually make a run in the Champions League, something that this team has been missing since they won the Champions League all the way back in, I believe, 2012. And yeah, they have the talent. They have the depth. Even with guys like Pulisic and Ziyech and Billy Gilmore and Chilwell and Silva now hurt to start the season, they have just an embarrassing amount of quality players in their side. No one has quite stepped up to, say, the levels that Eden Hazard was playing at when he was at Chelsea, but, I mean, this is the most depth they've had in the squad in years, if not ever. So it's a really exciting time to be a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm very glad that I jumped on the bandwagon at a time when I feel like it was still valid. I mean, once Pulisic went there, that was I decided that was going to be my team. They kind of got me into the Premier League. And, you know, yeah, you mentioned they gave up a lot of goals last year. They also scored a lot of goals last year, which made them incredibly fun to watch. But, you know, I'm completely in agreement. I think that it's not only going to have to be doing something productive in the Premier League, because obviously, like you mentioned, I don't think they're going to be able to compete with Liverpool and Man City, but you talk about the FA Cup, you talk about Champions League, that's really where I think we're going to be able to see this team shine. Switching over from, you know, a team in Chelsea that's got quite a few new pieces to a team that, when I'm taking a look at them, looks pretty much the same. Manchester United finished with 66 points as well. They tied with Chelsea last year. Take me through what your expectations are for Paul Pogba and this Man U team, or in 2020.
My expectations are pretty high. I mean, we already saw what this team can potentially do when the restart happened, especially with Greenwood more entrenched into the side. I can only imagine what that could look like throughout an entire season, because Martial, Greenwood, and Rashford up front, that is really dangerous and really spicy. Those are three guys who can all play centrally as a striker, who can all attack with the ball in their feet, who all complement each other perfectly on the pitch. And then you have a guy in Bruno Fernandes who can get the ball to them anytime he wants, really, because he's one of the best passers in the league. We saw that last season. And Pogba might not be fully healthy right now, but once he's back, I mean, that's probably the best two-way midfielder in the world when he's going right. So, I mean, the only real issues for this team is probably defensively, but they actually weren't a horrible defensive team last season. So it's hard to poke too many holes into this team. Maybe they need a second center back, but other than that, I mean, this is a really good team. They're just not quite as deep as Chelsea. And it'll be really interesting to see how they're going to shape up in the Champions League, given that they haven't been there in a couple seasons.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the other thing with Man U, I still remember getting like 3 a.m. Snapchats from you just ranting about how good Paul Pogba was before I really knew who Paul Pogba was. But you're absolutely right. I mean, he is one of the centerpieces on a team that I think has very high expectations this season. And, you know, I don't want to waste too much time on Manchester United, but again, I think the sky's the limit. I think that they could potentially beat out Chelsea this year. I personally would put Chelsea 3, Man U 4, as you had. The other team that you mentioned in that group is one that, you know, maybe doesn't have as high of expectations, but does have a very high ceiling this season. And that's an Arsenal squad that got off to a really good start. I had a chance to watch that game bright and early in my 6 a.m. shift at Target. A 3-0 win over Fulham, and what do you think is the limit on what Arsenal can accomplish this season?
Well, I mean, the limit is Champions League football, and the reason why I say that, even though this roster does have quite a few holes, is because of their manager, Mikel Arteta. The guy is incredibly smart, and we saw it last season when he took over halfway through the year. Arsenal were much better, and they seemed like they have much more of a identity, whether it was playing 5 at the back or 4-3-3 in more of an attacking style. And the reason why I say that is because under the previous administration, it seemed like the players were managing themselves. It was really disorganized. There was no identity in the squad. There was no real transfer plan. But now with Arteta in charge, having previously been the assistant manager under Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, this Arsenal team finally has a blueprint. They finally have a manager who knows what buttons to press at the right times, what styles to deploy against certain teams. I mean, we saw at the end of last season, like beating City and Chelsea in the final two rounds of the FA Cup to win the FA Cup was a huge surprise. I mean, they've already gotten off to a hot start this season by winning the Community Shield. I mean, that doesn't mean much, but still. And I don't know, they already have a lot of talent offensively. I mean, Nicolas Pepe, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is arguably, you can make a case he's the best striker in the league. And then Alexander Lacazette as well. Like, this team has a lot of talent up front. They have some really interesting young pieces. And it really comes down to the question of their midfield play and their center back play in the middle of the pitch. And if they can improve on that front and maybe even add a center back at some point during the year, then I don't know. Like, they could make the top four if Chelsea's players don't mix well or if United get a couple bad injuries. You know, it's the Premier League. It is unpredictable. To a degree, you know?
Yeah, and that's what makes it so fun because, again, yeah, there are only a few teams that are really capable of winning it, but once you get beyond that, almost anything can happen. I think Arsenal is definitely, you know, a team that might be able to step up into that. So as this segment goes on, you and I talked about this already, but you'll notice if you're listening, things are going to get a little bit quicker. So moving on to kind of the second of the three stints, so to speak, I'm going to give you a few teams. I'm just going to throw the team out there, and I want you to just give me as much as you want to say about that team and what you think they can do in 2020. And let's start with a really fun team, a team that I don't know if you watched this game yesterday. I'm going to edit it out, but that's when I'm posting this in a few days, so... But anyway, a team that I watched earlier this week, Wolves. Wolves looked really good in their season opener.
Yeah, this is one of the best managed teams in the league. They're not in the Europa League this season, so that should actually help them in terms of their position in the league. And it'll just be interesting to see, can guys like Raul Jimenez keep on scoring enough goals, and do they have the playmaking capabilities necessary in order to get into that top six again, because defensively they've got it. I mean, this is one of the best defensive teams in the league.
Moving on to another team that did really well last season, and I really don't know what this team is going to accomplish this year. Leicester City, you know, they got off on the right foot. They got a win in week one, but what are kind of your expectations for them this season?
I guess timid in terms of wanting to place Leicester anywhere. I think they have the perfect manager in Brendan Rodgers. He's no longer overwhelmed at a big club like Liverpool, and he's not at a relatively smaller club in Celtic where he can just dominate. He's on the perfect club. He's with the perfect club in Leicester, a team that will be contending for a top six or even a top four spot every single season now, just given the way how well that organization is run. But I mean, with Madison now back healthy, James Madison, that is, and he is real key to their offensive creativity, and he wasn't available for them toward the end of the last season. So getting him back is huge for them. And losing Chilwell hurts the Chelsea, but, I mean, when it seems like Leicester, when they lose a limb, they grow it back. It's just the way it's worked ever since they won the league. They won the league, what, 4 or 5 years ago? That was incredible, right? I like this Leicester team, but I'm not willing to put them too high, given the amount of stress that the Europa League may give their roster this season.
Fair enough. One more team that I want to give you unlimited time on, and then we're going to really start speeding things up as we get into the rest of the Premier League. But a team that I feel like the only reason we're going to have to give them this much attention is because everyone else does. And you know what? I also love giving you opportunities to rant, if that's something that I can do. So give me your thoughts on Tottenham this year.
Tottenham. Well, Tottenham has a manager. His name's Jose Mourinho, and I don't even know how to compare him to anybody else because you can't. But I guess the easiest way to describe him is that he's a better analyst than he is as a manager at this point. I mean, they lost 1-0 to Everton yesterday, and then he just blamed the loss on everything other than his own tactics and his own team, because that's what he does. And you're going to be hearing a lot of that this season, because this Tottenham team is quite okay. They have a lot of talent under the previous regime with Mauricio Pochettino. And, I mean, Pochettino was a brilliant manager who kind of got screwed over by his board. His board's inability to actually go out there and spend and improve an incredibly talented young core that they already had. But that's a story for another day. Anyway, they still have Dele Alli. They still have Son. They still have Harry Kane, of course. But, I mean, it just seems like there's this Groundhog Day feeling of staleness at the club, despite the fact that they did get 2 transfers this summer, which is good. But, I mean, they're going to need a lot more than Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and Matt Doherty in order to jump into the top 6 this season, even though they did sneak into the 6th place last year despite a horrible start. But, I mean, I like Arsenal better this season. Just as a comparison. And to me, that's the 16 that will jump into that top 6 this season that wasn't there last season.
All right, fair enough. So this is one of our favorite things to do. We've done a couple segments like this in the past on various shows, but we like kind of the quick, fast-paced, bounce it back and forth type segments. That's what this is going to turn into right now. So here's how this is going to work. I'm going to hit you with a Premier League team, and I'm going to give you 10 seconds to give me one thought on each of the remaining teams. Cokie Riley, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Newcastle, go.
Really good summer. A potential top 8 team if they had a different ownership.
Crystal Palace.
I like them better than most. If Zaha stays, they're staying in the league.
Everton.
A potential top 6 team, and that's not a joke, especially with the addition of James Rodriguez. What a signing.
Aston Villa.
Could dip into relegation, especially if Grealish gets sold.
Burnley.
They need more money. And I hope they stay up. Sean Dyche is a great manager.
A team that we saw almost do a crazy thing earlier, Leeds United.
I love this team. I love their energy. I love their fearlessness. I love their manager. So they could potentially jump into the top 10, but I think they're like 11th or 12th place team. I really like them a lot, though.
Southampton.
Well, people are kind of higher on this team this season, despite all of the behind-the-scenes, I guess, shadiness with them. Shadiness isn't the right word. Dysfunction, maybe. But without Højbjerg, I have trouble seeing them get into the top 10.
Brighton.
Well, I just watched Brighton today, and they were much more energetic and offensively spirited than I originally anticipated. But the Lallana injury today is something I definitely want to keep an eye on.
Sheffield United.
Arguably the best coach team in the league, arguably the best defensive team in the league. I mean, they almost made the Europa League last season.
West Ham.
I'm worried about West Ham. I'm worried about the lack of money they put into their team. I'm worried about how close they came to relegation last season. They could certainly get relegated this year.
Fulham.
Lucky to be there.
Fair enough. And finally, West Brom.
Also kind of lucky to be there, but not to the point of Fulham.
We talked about some of the teams at the bottom. Let me ask you a few more quick things before I let you go. What are your predictions for the three teams that get relegated this season?
Well, I'm going to go out on a tiny bit of a limb and say, and go West Ham, which is a bit of a limb. Most people are picking Crystal Palace, which I don't totally get, or Burnley, which I kind of understand, given the lack of quality signings, given the lack of financial resources they have. So, yeah, I'm going to go West Ham, Fulham, and West Brom. And I definitely think Leeds stay up, and I don't think there's really a good candidate for out of West Brom and Fulham, those two teams just lack the talent in order to stay up this season. At least that's what it looks like at the moment.
All right, fair enough. And one last thing, I'm going to give you an opportunity, completely open floor. Do you have any kind of a hot take or just a take in general that you want to make at the early part of the season? Of course, this will be archived, so you can always point back to it later and say, see, I told you so.
You know, I thought about this take a little bit. I've workshopped it. I may have said another team would finish in sixth place instead, but I think Everton making top six and makes the Europa League. That's my hot take.
Ooh, all right. I like it. So Everton in the top six.
I love what Carlo Ancelotti's done as manager of that team. I really think that Thomas Rodriguez signing really adds that special top-tier playmaker to a team that already had one of the better strikers in the league in Richarlison, and they have Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's also a very talented young striker as well. And I don't know, I really like what Everton's doing, and Carlo is way overqualified to be the manager of that team, and Thomas is way overqualified to be the attacking catalyst of that team. And I mean, if it's going to be a team that sort of jumps into that sixth spot, it's them. Even though I do think Wolves, Tottenham, and even Sheffield will definitely contend for that sixth spot, but I'm giving it to Everton at the moment.
All right, well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Koki Riley with the bold take. I very much appreciate it. Koki, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk Premier League as the season goes on, but as always, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tyler. This was awesome.
And with that, that will actually wrap it up for this episode. That's all the time we have, but keep it locked right here. However you listen, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or on Mixcloud, we will have plenty of good content coming at you next week as the NFL continues, as the Premier League continues, and of course, as the NBA nears the conclusion of its season. I want to say a special thank you once again to Alex Weiner and Koki Riley for coming on the show today. A special thanks to all of our guests who make this show possible, and of course, our listeners. You guys really do make the show possible. I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you again so much for tuning in as we have gotten this off the ground. It's been a lot of fun getting back into the podcasting scene, and of course, we will have plenty of good content, as I mentioned, coming at you guys next week. But that'll do it for me, for Tyler Henry, for Alex Weiner, and for Koki Riley. I want to say thank you once again for tuning in, and keep it locked right here for more content from the TBH Sports Podcast.